Tim here with a message before the podcast. Due to rights reasons, the songs have been shortened for this podcast. Every song is taken from Snow Patrol's The Forest is the Path, which was written by Gary Lightbody, Nathan Connolly and Johnny McDade. The Forest is the Path was released on 13th of September 2024 on Polydor. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Where real music matters.
Absolute Radio.
Tim's Listening Party.
Hi, I'm Tim Burgess and welcome to another episode of Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. If you're new to the show, this is where I go through an album with an artist and we listen to the stories behind it. I've had loads of great chats so far with guests from The Police and The Libertines to Bon Jovi and Kings of Leon. To find any previous episodes, just search for Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts to discover a whole archive of past listening parties. Just like Tim's Twitter listening party, a huge part of this is your involvement. So please get involved on social media throughout the show using the hashtag Tim's Listening Party and check out @Tim_Burgess and @AbsoluteRadio on X for more listening party content. This episode, I'm joined by Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol to talk about the band's brand new 8th album, The Forest is the Path. Over the years, Snow Patrol have racked up multi-platinum selling albums and singles worldwide. They've achieved having a song with over a billion Spotify streams, as well as winning a prestigious Ivor Novello Award. Having just entered their third decade as a band, they continue to go from strength to strength, still one of Great Britain and Northern Ireland's favourite bands. An example of this is their 2006 song, Chasing Cars. It is ubiquitous to the point where it's been ruled to be the most played song of the 21st century on UK radio. We at Absolute Radio have definitely contributed a fair few plays of that song to that record. We just played a show together in the Northeast.
We did indeed.
Yeah.
Up near Durham.
Yeah.
And you guys were absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much.
The sound was mega. There's something about the Hammond organ that just takes off.
It takes up a lot of space, but when it takes off, and it's like really powerful. And I'm glad you said that because most of the time you come off stage and all you hear about is like some of the technical issues and stuff like that. And I don't really have any technical issues because I just got a microphone, but. It's good to hear that you thought it was good.
I thought it was mega. Absolutely mega.
Oh, well, I enjoyed it. I only caught a little bit of yours because obviously we all piled into the van and jumped off. But I mean, how do you feel about, playing? There's a real intensity to your performance. Kind of brings you really close to the audience. I mean, do you get all that? Do you feel that?
Yeah, no, we do. Absolutely. We've done some festivals mainly. We did our own show in Limerick, but which was awesome.
Yeah.
And
was that for the new singles and stuff?
Well,
like that?
The new single was we filmed the video for that there,
right, fantastic,
at Thomond Park in Limerick in the rugby stadium there, and it was unbelievable. Yeah. But yeah, you know what it's like, festivals. You get there, you're like, half an hour later you're on stage, and it's there's no sound check or anything like that. It's kind of seat your pants stuff. And there's something kind of magical about that.
Yeah.
You don't really, you're not sort of sitting around in the venue all day in a sense. It feels like there's something that sparks you into life pretty quickly. And a festival crowd is always really just fun. So much kinetic energy everywhere.
Because if you can't quite hear everything that you need to hear,
well, there's that
in order for you to play, then you're looking around for someone to help while you're playing, and then you kind of walk in close to the bass player and sort of like having a listen to the amp rather than in the monitors and stuff like that. And it's
that creates magic, right? I've done a lot of holding a guitar up, holding the guitar down, and trying to indicate with my head, vocal up, please. It's very hard to do whilst singing, but yeah, exactly.
I love that. And we share a very close friend who puts these things into operation, Neil Mather.
Oh, what a legend.
Yeah, we've shared him.
Yes,
we have.
Yeah,
tour Neil's, manager extraordinaire.
Neil's been tour managing us for it's going to be nearly 20 years soon.
Yeah,
and he's just so calm.
Yeah,
I've only seen him lose his cool slightly one time, and it's because we pushed him to the brink.
Oh my god! Well.
we did four shows in 2 days, in four different cities.
Yeah.
On the 100 Million Suns sort of tour, start of the tour, we were just asking him too many questions, and he turned around and went, "Give me a minute." I remember that was lit. That was in 20 years. That was it. That was the only time I've ever seen him like even slightly lose his cool.
I mean, he deals with some, you know, big characters. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Neil tour manages his tour manager Liam and Noel, and Happy Mondays. He's done some incredible gigs.
Yeah,
we're very, very difficult, as you know. But yeah, no, it's he's really a wonderful kind of steadying force.
Well, let's kick off this listening party with the first track from The Forest Is the Path. It's All. Snow Patrol, the first song from The Forest Is the Path. The new record's fantastic, and congratulations.
Thank you.
First track, All, I've got written down here. So it is a love song after all. Through the songwriting, it seems like your own shortcomings are the side of you that you like to show to the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably where I'm from. We don't crow, we don't puff our chests out very much. I might have taken that maybe a bit too far, like the opposite way, but we, you know, and I kind of, I like that, you know, I like that approach to life that you try not to, I don't think any of us, Johnny, Nathan, myself, are particularly good at talking about our anything positive about ourselves.
Right.
But we're really great about talking about positive things about each other.
And
I think that's the thing. That's where we kind of shine in celebration.
Where I've
been doing a lot of interviews and talking about Nathan and Johnny, and I have no shortage of things to say about them.
Of course. Where,
but when it gets to me, I'm like, I was on the record too, I guess. Kind of afraid to say anything.
How did it come about as like being the first single? Was it really obvious in the first track on the album? You know, how does that work with you?
Yeah, you know yourself, when it comes to like track listing, for people like ourselves that love the album as an art form, it's such an important thing. There's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of back and forth. Songs get moved around. It's like it's about trying to create whatever it is, a story or a flow or something, two songs,
the live set,
complement each other. And it just felt like a statement of intent or something, like this song is maybe sort of one of the biggest sounding songs we've done in a long, long time. It's like we start the album with some confidence. You know, maybe belies the very thing that I was just talking about. The kind of inability to be confident. As a collective, I think we are.
That's why you're in a band together, isn't it? Kind of like, you know, some members have certain qualities that others don't.
Absolutely,
You know, I love working with Mark. I think that if I am the dreamer, he's very practical, you know, and kind of like puts my dreams into practice.
That's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It really is. It's you know, and so it's I get that. I think that's fantastic. So track one is All, and it was the first single, was it?
No, track two is the first
track
single.
The beginning, good way to open a new campaign.
Yes,
We'll go to track two then. The beginning that actually was the first thing that everyone heard, but that was All.
That was All, and now is the beginning.
And that's the end.
That's it. We started with All, and we've got nothing else to say because we said it.
So, okay, track two, the beginning.
That was the first song written for the record. Technically, I suppose that's not true, but it's the first song we wrote in earnest.
And was that, did you work with the producer that did the album as well?
So it's funny, that's a good question, because the first song was written with me and Fraser T. Smith.
Yes.
Me and Fraser wrote that. He's an absolute legend, and just such a lovely man. Have you met Fraser?
I haven't, no.
Well, let me tell you, okay. You are both beautiful souls, and you'll get on very well.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure when you meet. He's such a lovely man. And we met him at exactly the right time. Yeah. We had tried to make the album the first time. It didn't work.
Right.
It took 5 months and it didn't work. And when we got to the end of it, we were all
same songs, mostly the same songs.
Mostly the same songs. There's a couple of new ones written in the meantime ended up on the record. But yeah, we were kind of a bit broken or disheartened at the end of that process.
You would be.
And then I had worked with Fraser on All. And we decided that we would sort of see if Fraser was up for trying a few days in the studio and see if we all got on.
And who's Fraser worked with?
Fraser's worked with Adele and Stormzy and Dave and so many extraordinary people.
Yeah.
He's just finished working on the K Tempest record, and I'm such a fan of theirs, and the way Fraser's talking about that record, I cannot wait to hear it.
Something else.
We didn't know what we needed really, but it was the perfect thing to happen to us in that point. Someone that was so calm and so much fun and just made everything just so easy and opened his kind of heart and opened his heart, not kind of heart, heart to us and his studio and his life, really. And the four of us just got on like a house on fire, like almost meet, like just within seconds. And it just felt like this is the man. And we went back in January this year with him, for 5 weeks. So the album had taken 5 months and didn't work, took 5 weeks with Fraser. And, it was kind of just this blissful experience.
Was it an unusual process? Like, you know, when you worked with Fraser, was it like a different process than we're used to?
Yes, you know, different for sure in great ways. We've worked with, in my opinion, one of the greatest producers of all time, Jack Knife Lee, for 20 years.
He's an
extraordinary man. We love him to bits. He's part of the family. But we talked to Jack Knife about it. We thought that it was the right time to try working with somebody new.
Course,
so we did. And as I say, that first 5 months, it didn't work. So because I'd written with Fraser already, then we tried Fraser to do it. And the process was so much fun because I guess some producers work in different ways.
Yeah.
You know yourself.
Yeah.
But he just knew when to lean in and when to move out. You saw the three of us gelling. He was like, I'm going to leave you guys to gel and just be on the periphery. And then when we were like stuck on something, he'd come in and we'd all four of us would gel together, and it was a very sort of breathing in. I sort of see him as the kind of the lungs of the record, that's just breathing in and breathing out. Everything felt oxygenated and so revitalized. We were kind of dead on our feet before we got in with him.
That sounds wonderful, meant to be kind of stuff, you know?
Absolutely.
Let's hear the beginning. In the sea park, in the sea. There is only you. Beginning on Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol joins me to talk about the album The Forest is the Path. And am I right that the lyrics from this song, I made a mess of everything, being scared unequivocally, I don't know how to love, is that?
I don't know how to love, yeah.
Yeah, so unequivocally, I guess, I mean, it sounds so great when you say it. And I guess everyone's heard it now because it was like the first single, even track
well,
two.
Well, I don't know if everyone has, but whoever heard it on the radio, maybe. But some of this album is written about how I was, sort of being afraid to be loved.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been afraid to love.
Yeah.
But I am afraid to be loved.
Right.
At times, or have been in my life, and I don't feel like that now. Mm-hmm. But I have done, even up to quite recently. I've done a lot of work on that to kind of try and figure out what that is. And this record was therapeutic in that way.
So
when I'm saying I want to be in love without being loved in return, which is one of the lines in that song, it's like that's me maybe as a 30-year-old man rather than the 48-year-old man that I am now. It's hard to keep track after a while, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it gets worse. But, you know, especially when you still feel like you're about 34, I think.
No, I've definitely overshot the runway somewhere on the timeline.
I mean, that's a big one. And the next track, Everything's Here and Nothing's Lost. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that was Johnny and I got together to start writing the album in Somerset. Yeah. And the first day we wrote the beginning, and the second day we wrote Everything's Here and Nothing's Lost. The third day wrote Never Really Tire, which is track 8, I think. Everything's Here, Nothing's Lost was kind of, how did we start that? There might have been a little guitar thing that I had done already, and then Johnny took it further with the piano.
Yeah,
the
piano.
The chorus. I think the two of us worked on that. With the beginning, it was Johnny playing the piano and I was singing a melody over the top. Uh-huh. And with this, I think musically, we were both kind of mucking around. And then what happens when Johnny and I are together, or Johnny Nathan and I are together, Johnny will then take... He plays every instrument.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, he's one of the best producers in the world himself, and he plays everything.
Yeah.
So he'll take the song and build the track, and I will sit and write the lyrics.
Yeah.
And that's what we were doing every time. So there was a finished song at the end of each day that we got together for the record.
Yeah.
So lyrics and everything, which wasn't maybe usual for us in the past, not very unusual.
Do you change a lot of the lyrics later, or do you keep them the same?
No, they were mostly the same. Wow, mostly finished on the end of day one, and that is
good going.
Thank you. I hadn't. Johnny kind of. It was a gentle challenge. Challenge. It was too strong a word, but it was a suggestion to say, why don't you write the lyrics today?
Yeah.
Rather than, because what I normally do is take them away.
Yeah, of course.
And then. Take ages.
I know that process.
Yes. One of the songs on our last album is called Life on Earth. It's aptly titled, I suppose, because it took me 5 years. So like the three chords, that's it. But the lyrics took 5 years.
Yeah.
So this time around, nothing took 5 years, even though, well, it's a long time in between albums. But yeah, that first day we had that chorus sounding kind of big, and the lyrics were all done and the vocals were done, like the beginning vocal, that's the vocal on the track and on the from the first day, and that second day that's the vocal on the track for Everything's Here, Nothing's Lost as well. So we were having a very kind of fertile period where we were just like making songs in a day.
Yeah.
Every time we went in, it's the most creative, I think, stretch of time that we've had for a long
good
sort time.
Of like new things, new challenges, or Mark always used to try and get himself a new guitar or a new toy or something for a new album, and you know, I mean, I've tried to write lyrics in a day as well and stuff like that, but I think it's good to set yourself new ways of doing things. Here is track number 3 on The Forester's Path. It's Everything Here and Nothing's Lost. Everything's here. I'm Tim Burgess and I'm delighted to be chatting to Gary Lightbody about Snow Patrol's new album, The Forest is the Path. I'm picturing you in Somerset.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, where do you set up? What's the...
Johnny and his wonderful team, Graham and Will Reynolds and Graham Archer, big shout out to them both for the, all that they did on this record. Extraordinary, extraordinary guys.
They moved your stuff in.
It was more than that. Yeah. It was way more than that because they're both amazing musicians, amazing producers in their own right and engineers. Will actually came up with that mad guitar bit on the beginning. Mm-hmm. So he and he's obviously credited as one of the songwriters on the song. So yeah, they set up three rooms of sound in this wee house that we rented. Wow. So there was three rooms sort of going at all times. And Johnny and I were mostly in one room and then we sort of, like, stuff would be sent across and they would work on it and we'd go in there and go, all right, what's happening in here? So there was really a lot of musical fun going on everywhere.
And it's good to have, like, a vibe of other people in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like sort of going to rehearsal spaces and stuff like that and just walking out the door and seeing people from other bands and stuff like that, you know, when it's just a good thing rather than just being, you feel a bit isolated if you're just on your own at times, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And songwriting can be kind of lonely.
Yeah, yeah, which you know that.
Yeah.
You've known that. You've known that, but not lately, it seems like.
No.
So where are we up to now? Are we up to Your Heart Home? Or?
Your Heart Home. Your Heart Home was one of the songs that we hadn't got the first time.
Oh, good.
That I did on GarageBand to begin with, and quite a bit of the GarageBand stuff that I did on the original version is on the record.
Fantastic.
But Fraser took all that and turned it into something really epic. I actually have the different on my phone. I was listening to the difference the other day. It's quite interesting. So that was started with me, but then you know, really, really expanded upon. Yeah. And then the lyrics, those took a bit longer than the other ones.
Yeah.
Because that was me at home.
Yeah.
Without Johnny, but also without that, without, like, in a, when I'm on my own, I'm like, I don't know, I'm just not, I'm just a bit more, not lazy, but like lackadaisical. I want to move on to another idea.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as I've got a song idea done, I'll go, okay, another one.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem as well, because then you've got too many ideas and not enough lyrics.
I get that. I'd love to hear the phone version.
Yeah.
Time for another song. This is Your Heart Home on Absolute Radio. That was track 4 from The Forest of the Path, Your Heart Home, playing on Absolute Radio. Gary Lightbody joining me for a listening party. Now, this is the sound of your voice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not someone who chooses Snow Patrol singles, but if I was, I would choose that one.
Right.
I think it's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, that was written at Johnny's house. And Johnny did a lot of extraordinary work on that, production-wise. And when we took it to Fraser, it just kept sort of growing, but in a really interesting way. The bigness was already there.
Right.
Those drum patterns that are in the song, the strange sort of drums in the chorus, strange and wonderful and huge.
Yeah.
Johnny had already done those, programmed those.
Yeah.
And then Ash Soane, who played drums on the record, he played them, and so the song just kept sort of growing by like an organism.
Yeah.
Like, every time.
And had you got the melody and the lyrics together?
The melody
at this
and
point,
the lyrics, they were all,
so
again,
all
they were
growing together
in the day that we wrote it. And I suppose going back a tiny bit is I had been collecting lyric ideas, which I'd never done before.
Right.
And normally we start an album and then I'll write to the melodies. Right. But I've been collecting loads of lyric ideas as I was walking around.
Where were you walking around?
The forest by my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why it's called The Forest is the Path. That's my everyday walk. I go in there and I get lost and I love it. And I was just writing mostly stuff into my phone or into notebooks. And then I had all these lines so that when I sat there on the first day in the beginning and wrote the beginning at the top of the blank page, I put the line, I want to be in love without being loved in return, onto the page. Yeah. And then everything grew from there.
Yeah.
So every time, including This Is the Sound of Your Voice, I would be able to like put a line onto a page so it wasn't blank anymore.
Yeah.
That fear of the blank page, which you will know well, I know well, all writers know well, is like, you know, sometimes just having something on there is like the best energy fuel ignition for a song. And the line that went on the page that day was, Belfast continues. Never doubted it wouldn't stand off the canvas.
Yeah, it's really fantastic.
So that then I was like, oh right, this song is a life. It's like, it's not a day in the life, it's a life in a day.
Yeah.
It's like, it's vignettes of a life lived. And every line,
like a baby girl or something as well.
Yeah, there's a line about the couple that I'm writing about having a kid.
It's
and
gorgeous,
meeting.
Yeah.
Then Belfast is the setting of the song, and then, you know, like, and then there's memories from their life in the rest of the song. And I suppose it's more of a story song than it is a personal song. It's like stories of people's that I love's lives, and I've put them all together into one song where like the things that have meant something to me and my my niece being born is the one of the lines basically, but I've set it in the life of this couple.
I mean, it's, you know, track five and it felt like a different thing to me as the build-up, as the album goes on. But then I guess that's what track five's for.
That's what track five's for. Yeah.
So good compiling, whoever did that. Okay, let's hear This Is the Sound of Your Voice. Next up is Hold Me in the Fire.
Yes.
Which I guess just keeps propelling the album, just like moving forward. And can you tell me lots about that one?
Yeah, Hold Me in the Fire, again, written at Johnny's house. That was one of the things that we kept from the end section of that song.
Yeah.
Was one of the things we kept from the first recording. The first recording session, the first 5 months. So there is a couple of fragments from that still existing on the record, and that's one of them. One of the main reasons that it remains on there is because the vocal is so high that I didn't think that I could do it again. there's so much great guitar work from Nathan Connolly on all of this record, but especially that song. And watching Nathan and Johnny vibe off each other. I'm not a brilliant guitar player by any stretch of the imagination. I'm fine, I guess, some days. But Nathan and Johnny are extraordinary together, and watching them vibe off each other is really one of the sort of treasures of this record for me.
Right.
And especially on a song like that, when they're both kind of like, everything they're putting on it is making the song bigger. It's not making the song collapse or be overwrought, or it's just adding magic to it. And that's...
there's always a danger in there, and like the more that you put on a record, the kind of smaller it gets.
Absolutely,
you know, and it's a real art form to get all that to work. Let's hear that song we've been talking about, Hold Me in the Fire.
Yeah.
Hold Me in the Fire by Snow Patrol on Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. I'm playing back Snow Patrol's 2024 album, The Forest is the Path. So, Gary, so, you know, I came across you maybe in about 2000 or something like that. Do you think the steadiness of your trajectory has kind of, like, served you well?
Yeah, I think the first 10 years really helped.
Yeah.
And it's not that I want to go back to those 10 years and start again, because there was a lot of gigs that we played to virtually no one for 10 years, you know, 20 people. Anybody that was there, thank you for coming in those days. We played a show to one person. you know, that was an interesting one. There was three times more people on stage than there was in the audience.
That's amazing.
But it was really important, because if I personally, like, not the band, because I'm not going to speak for everybody, but if I personally had success when I was 18, I wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have been handled it. There's no chance that we would have had a 30-year career. I didn't know it, but I needed those 10 years of no success to beat that ego out of me.
get
to a place where it was, I mean, obviously, it certainly wasn't planned, but it just, it happened at the right time for us, even though I was desperate for it to happen sooner.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, because it happened quite quickly for the Charlatans. And then I think we kind of, like, changed direction so drastically on our second album in many ways that we kind of, like, lost half our audience and then had to start again. So it's kind of quite cool.
What was that journey like? Like, how did you feel in those, in that moment?
Well, our first album debuted at number one, and our second album debuted at 21, so it's kind of quite a drop, and there was certain members of the band who really felt that, you know, kind of like, what have we done? But I think there was a real, it was really interesting to go from, like, sort of like doing The Only One I Know and Opportunity and Sprouse and Green and stuff like that to doing songs like Ignition and Can't Even Be Bothered. It was like very, like, and a real abrupt sort of change. So I think we kind of like got what we wanted, really. And then with our third album, we kind of like thought, well, we always wanted to sound like we do live, so let's make a record, you know, that just sounds like a live band. And that's how we kind of got to be in, I think, the way that we are kind of now.
That's brilliant, because you felt comfortable then at that point to just do what you wanted to do. Sometimes you feel kind of there's this pressure to do or recreate or something like that, and then when you're really comfortable in your own skin, you can make the record that you really want to.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that you say about live, because there's so many times we've made songs in the studio, not played them live, then went out, recorded them, released them, then went out and played them live, and we're like, oh, damn, I wish we could go back in and do it the way we're doing it live. So that's something that we like try and sort of try to think ahead on now.
Yeah. Because it's actually hard to physically do that with a new song, isn't it? I mean, I mentioned like a band that I really loved watching when I was a kid all the time on these shows, and it was a band called New Order, right? And in 1985, 86, they would always debut new, brand new songs before they were written. So they were half songs, and I just thought, God, why can't we just keep doing that?
Yeah.
To get that live feel and understand it, but it
doesn't always work out that way.
No. And it's different times, I suppose. But anyway, back to you.
Oh, no, I'd rather this was a conversation between the two of us rather than talk about me.
Well, let's hear the seventh song on the album, Years at Four. Track number seven on The Forest is a Path, Years That Fall. It's Tim Burgess here with Gary Lightbody for a listening party. I really love Years That Fall.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it's like, again, it's a different kind of pace and a different kind of like, different feeling. Maybe, I don't know, more beat driven in a way, I suppose, or, you know, kind of like bouncy.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's my critique.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to playing it live, that's for sure.
Right, yeah. It'd be a good one to do live.
I think it's going to be fun. That's another one where I started on GarageBand and then took it to Fraser.
Yeah.
And some of the vocals that I did on GarageBand are actually on that. So like, I don't know. This isn't an advert for GarageBand. I'm just saying that.
No, you could get a sponsorship deal later. I mean, you know.
I have to say that I was not paid anybody by GarageBand. It's a really good example, actually, of Nathan Connolly's genius.
Right.
Because we were working on another song and Nathan goes, and you'll know how hard this is.
Mm-hmm.
You're working on another song and Nathan goes, what about this for a guitar line for Years of Fall? I'm like, how are you able to, what do you have to separate in your mind to like do a guitar part for another song that's not being played? The other song was being played at the time.
That's amazing.
And Nathan was like, what about this for Years of Fall? I'm like, I don't know, because I can't do what you do. I don't know how to
square it.
I don't know how to put them separately. And the other thing about that is, if I have an idea, a melody idea, if I don't record it, that's it, it's gone.
Yeah.
But Nathan, who came up with that guitar part when another song was going, we came back to Years That Fall, and he remembered it.
Wow.
And it was like, it was... I can't speak more highly of how complicated that is to do. It's an extraordinary gift. But it's it only happens three times.
Yeah.
And it happens at the end of the song. There's a guitar line going into the third chorus.
Right.
Or in the breakdown, and then it goes into the third chorus, then it's halfway through the third chorus. And you'll hear it if you listen to the song again.
Uh-huh.
But it just elevates everything. In that last section, and it was the missing piece.
There's like a ha-ha or something like in the pre-choruses.
Yeah. That's all the GarageBand. That's all recorded on GarageBand. The notes are rubbing against each other. And,
And then it goes into like the chorus and it's like mad.
Thank you. It's a fun song.
So that's not to do with the guitar line then? So the guitar line's on top of
the guitar line goes at the very end. The one I'm talking about goes at the very end. And I'd like to give Nathan massive, massive props for being able to do that. That's
fantastic.
Extraordinary.
Fantastic. Gary, up next is Never Really Tire. I felt that was like really heart on sleeve kind of stuff.
Yeah, the chorus, I had a little... voice note idea. We're in Somerset, third day in Somerset.
Day in Somerset. We've already got a couple of songs.
We've got a couple of songs. And I then challenged myself to, we had the Never Really Tire chorus bit, but we didn't have anything else. And Johnny was building this, well, I mean, it's a monster of a track that sort of like has all this intensity building up. The way I see it is this, the way I've tried to describe it to people in the studio when we were, that brought people in to play on it.
Right.
I was like, it's an eagle flying over a forest canopy.
Nice. Yeah.
And the trees.
Eagles, just amazing.
The undulation of the trees. This is what I want.
Yeah.
For the track to go like move like that rather than this. I don't want the trajectory just to be. And like when we did it, the track with Ash playing the drums.
Yeah.
I was like, doing this, like, and he was just watching me glued the whole time. We got this amazing video of Ash just like, he's just locked in and it's going up and down and up and down, but gradually going up, but there's these undulations and it's just, oh my goodness.
Wow,
and all the stuff
that
Johnny put on every part of the song, there is little nuances in it. There's things change and shift. There's not like one sort of theme or motif that goes through the whole song. It's like all these wonderful parts that interact with each other and fall away.
Yeah.
And the lyrics on that third day, don't get biblical or anything, but they were written in stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm just going to write whatever comes to mind and I'm not going to edit.
Yeah.
And and that's what the song is. And just to be 100% honest, I did try to edit. I was like, I can get that line better. And then nothing I wrote after that felt right. So it just, the words that were written, I mean, it took 15 minutes or 10 or whatever, short amount of time to write it. It all just came out at once. They were all like sort of lines, non sequiturs almost.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't come up with anything that I thought was better after that. So it felt like the song was set in stone.
That happens. Yeah. It's funny how that happens. And it's, I think people will also realize after that explanation that it's not just about sort of like playing the odd chord here and there or whatever, or the commitment that you have to a song. It's the way that you explain it to other people. Of like how, you know, how you want something to sound. And, you know, I mean, I love Eagles coming into music a lot, but that was a great explanation of how you would like the growth of the song to sound.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a really special day, the day that we recorded that, because it was everybody together.
Yeah.
Focusing
on an eagle.
Focusing on making sure, just as long as you never lose track of the fact that you are an eagle at any point.
I know. I think of myself as an eagle quite a lot, or a hawk. You know.
Yeah. Well, either's fine.
All right. This is Never Really Tired on Absolute Radio.
You're never really tired.
That's Never Really Tire from the new Snow Patrol album, The Forest is a Path. These lies are the last lies I'm going to say until the next one or something like that.
I'm not going to lie to you anymore.
Apart
from right now, basically.
Yeah, right.
So everything in the song is a lie.
Yeah, great.
And a funny thing happened. I was speaking to a German journalist a couple of days ago. And he went, "That's a really brutal song." And I was like, sorry to, like, you know, ask you this, but did you hear the first two lines?" He was like, "Oh, no, what are they?" I was like, "Yeah, because if you missed those first two lines, then I'd sound like a psychopath. But if you, it's something that's really important, because everything in the song is a lie." So it was kind of like, the opposite world, opposite land. But we had... Well, I say we, really, again, Johnny did this beautiful version of it. There was this orchestral found sounds version of it. It was so intense and thrilling. But I really felt like it belonged after Never Really Tire.
Yeah.
And that Never Really Tire, this chaos would come to an end, and then these lies would just sort of almost like be this devastating silence that comes out of it. So we redid the song, and Johnny played it on the piano. First take, by the way. First take with no rehearsal at all.
Right.
And then Nathan did this beautiful guitar that's just stunning. It really is stunning. Another great thing about Nathan is, it's like, of the three of us, I guess, it's all about serving the song.
Yeah.
Nobody has an ego about any of it.
Yeah.
And so like the guitar, it's like, it's almost like it's not a feature. It's an atmosphere, but we take it out and it really, the song kind of falls,
really
drops.
Yeah.
And then the vocal, it was like a scene from a cult or something. I was recorded cross-legged on the floor surrounded by candles.
Nice.
So it was, intense, I guess, in its own right. But yeah, that it was important to, I think, to... The contrasts are really important. We'd sort of spent the first half of the record building and building and building, and then really wanted to have a moment of stillness.
Yeah. Do you find, you know, like, say, with your first records, I mean, this certainly applies to me, that everything was just, like, you know, so brand new that you just, like, instinctively just did what, you know, what it was all about. And then from then on, you have to kind of, like, try and recreate that moment of, like, just going with the flow, but then you always building new, like, ways to try and sort of, like, catch that moment or find a new way of I don't know, just hurdles to jump over, or, you know, like lighting the candles and stuff, like putting yourself in that situation that you probably would never have done on the first record.
To try and
sort of like get the song down, you know.
I'd be too excited on the first record. I think that's one of the things, like, you're trying to recapture something from your first record, but you don't remember making it because you were too excited.
I know. We were just kids running about in a studio.
Just being in the studio for the first time. It's amazing.
I know. And just ruining the engineer's mix that he'd just done, just on purpose, just for laughs, you know.
That's awesome.
No, it's funny. Well, let's play the next song. This is called "These Lies."
Counterfeit. Ooh, and my hand never dials up your number, and it's not like I want you to wonder if I'm lost and I'm thinking of you. 'Cause yes, I'm fine and I'm finally clearer to understand what it is to be nearer, and then love is just pain in reverse.
Tell me about the next song on The Forest Is the Path. What if nothing breaks? I mean, it's another beauty. Where's it going now? Do you know that? Is this something that was written later, or you know, purposely later?
No, this one had a very long run up.
Did it?
It really did. It originally started. John and I were talking about it yesterday. It originally started as a Motown kind of thing.
Right, right.
It had that kind of Motown beat, and then it morphed into something else that I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But it still didn't have that chorus. So What If Nothing Breaks didn't exist
right,
yet.
Okay,
the line didn't
okay,
exist
oh,
yet.
Wow.
So it was called something else. The Last Light, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. And then Johnny took the verse that we had and turned it into very close to what you hear on the record. And then I was like, oh yeah, we're onto something here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so exciting. And then he starts playing some chords in the second for the chorus. What would become the chorus, and I just start singing, and those lines just kind of came out. So it was like, you know yourself, like a song can like have a whole bunch of different ways of existing.
Yeah.
And then when you find the right, when it finds its right place, it just suddenly blossoms.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what happened. The song just kind of became itself in that moment. And then, Johnny did that beautiful. I mean, Johnny's production on that is extraordinary. It's really beautiful.
Wow, it's a beautiful song. What are your plans at the moment? Do you have, like, any, you know, big tours coming up and all that?
Yeah, we're touring next year for quite a lot of it. We're just planning it at the moment. But we've got the European and the UK tour in January, February.
Keeping Josh busy.
Josh and Claire, big shout out to them. they've been sort of giving us some, you know yourself, like sort of trying to plan, you know, where you want to go, when you want to go, and all that. And hopefully we'll be able to take in quite a few places next year. But the festivals for us a year, and then some
great
shows
song
around the album release.
So you're gonna be busy.
Yeah.
Gary, I wanted to ask you, you know, you got some big songs and some big songs on Spotify, and, you know, we got a song or two like that, but do you think they lose their allure with a band? Obviously, certainly not with labels and advertising and stuff like that, but do you lose sort of contact with those big songs?
No, I've never done an advert. I think that's one of the reasons why the songs have never lost the allure.
Right, okay. Or maybe syncs or anything like
syncs,
that.
Syncs are fine, you know, because I watch a lot of TV and movies, so I'm very happy to feel like that's something that they're a place that they can live in, because it's a place that I enjoy myself.
Yeah.
But as someone who skips every advert, I don't feel so secure. Maybe one day, but not anytime soon. But I think it's the crowd. You know yourself. It's the crowd that makes the song new every night. You're doing it in a new place every night, or unless you're doing multiple shows in place. But for the most part, you're playing it to a new audience, and it's always slightly different. There's always something that happens in a show that creates a new kind of memory, little bit of magic, little bit of insanity. that makes the song feel new to me. How do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about playing the big songs?
Well, I mean, the only one I know for a while, we kind of dropped it, and it was okay, it was acceptable. The audience kind of went with it, I think. It just felt like a karaoke band or something like that, or it felt like a covers band doing our own song, but we were the band doing the cover. So it was very meta and very complex. But we all agreed that it was time to sort of like, you know, rest it for a little bit.
Right.
You know, because in the early days we played it twice, you know, in some gigs because, you know, we didn't have enough songs, you know. So it was kind of a weird one. And then now I think it's, for me, I just love the drama of, you know, the big songs when they're kind of like placed next to other sort of like purposely smaller songs in the set. And I just love the way the contrast works, so...
That's very interesting because we play one of the new songs right after Run in the set at the moment, and I feel like that really works.
It's a beautiful. It's like, you know, kind of opens everything up and then kind of brings it all back in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. Good mindset.
We're locked in there.
Here's track 10 on The Forest Is a Path. What If Nothing Breaks?
She said, "Well, just stop trying to make this right." If nothing breaks, what were you bracing for? She says, he says, I don't know how to make this right. She says,
that was What If Nothing Breaks by Snow Patrol. Talking about hope is track 11 on the album. And, so we're getting close to the end.
Yes.
You know? I'm pretty into the idea of, like, you know, positioning and, you know, on an album. So was this something that you thought, well, you know, the title track, Forest Is a Path, coming up, you know, we better, you know, do something before it? Or was it something that you thought, we've got, don't take offence, but, you know, we've got 12 tracks, where are we going to put this one?
No, because that one, I remember, again, written at Johnny's house, and our managers, Paul and Ryan, came round to have a listen to some of the stuff that we'd been doing, and we played that one, and there were tears in their eyes when we finished playing it, and it's a pretty good sign. They were crying, going, "Oh my god, our careers are over," or
I think you can tell, though, can't you? Yeah. You can tell. I mean, it's you know, it's a fine line, but once you tuned into that, I mean,
yeah, it felt like that song had it was really really something special about it, and again, just making sure that we allowed it to be itself. I think that's one of the key things of this whole record is whatever the song wants to be, just let it be that, and don't get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, don't try and push a song to be something it's not.
Yeah.
We're really trying to allow everything to just be. And that's a case in point on that one.
Wow.
It just has a, there's a really beautiful scene that kind of sets, I think, musically. And then I just try and sort of keep up the lyrics.
So was this done in LA then, or
no? Johnny's place in London,
right?
So everything was either written in Bangor, my hometown, or in London. Or Somerset.
Okay. Yeah,
those are the three places we wrote it in.
Yeah, fantastic. Time for another song. Let's hit play on the penultimate track of the record, "Talking About Hope."
And I know my name. I know your name. And I'm not talking about hope. I'm not talking about fire. I'm just trying to make sense of this desire. So put your hand in my head.
Talking about hope on Tim's Listening Party. This is the penultimate song from the new Snow Patrol album, The Forest Is the Path. Gary Lightbody still joins me. So the last track, The Forest Is the Path, I guess you've mentioned, you know, the forest that you like to walk to.
Yeah.
Walk in.
Yeah.
Nighttime walks, did you say?
No.
I like the idea of a nighttime walk in a forest, though.
Well, I mean, I suppose there will be some dark, sunset walks, but
right.
When in the winter, whenever it gets dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon,
it's a bit
in Northern Ireland, there won't be any option. There won't be any option to do it, to go for a walk in the daylight. But no, for most of the walks, I'm in the daylight, and I love the sun sort of coming through the trees, and there's something about that particular light, and there's. The smell of the earth after rain, it's always raining at home. The petrichor smell of the earth, like it
gorgeous.
Really just makes me feel so grounded and like in my body and like in, you know, feeling in nature rather than, you know, plugged into a phone or in the traffic in London or whatever, feeling sort of moved by something.
Yeah.
It feels like there's stillness in the forest.
Yeah.
That feels
it's an atmosphere, isn't it? You know,
yeah, absolutely. So, you know. Absolutely. And there's one side of my house. I'm very lucky in so many ways. I'm very lucky, but there's a forest on one side and the Belfast Locks on the other. So you kind of have both those places where there's plenty of fresh air and plenty of wildlife. You know, seabirds diving into the water. And, it's all good. So that's kind of the setting, I guess, of where the lyrics were kind of formed of this record.
Fantastic. As the album was coming together, you know, you didn't have any rules of it being like 10 tracks or 13 tracks. It was just like how, you know, however it felt complete.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a problem with the number 13. I don't know why particularly,
right.
But I'm just superstitious. And so we had...
Japanese don't have 13 floors in the elevator.
Right. Yeah, no, in America they don't have them either.
Don't they?
No, I don't think so.
I never noticed that, but I always notice it in Japan.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know why. There's no... I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to it, really. Uh-huh. And we did have... there was 13 tracks at one point,
okay.
But then we kept one song back... I did get over it and was like, okay, well, we'll do 13. And then we were like, there's another thing that's going to happen next year. Well, I'll talk about it some other time. But so that song will appear.
Right.
It's actually sort of a little bit out of the conversation of the album. It's more about my dad than everything else is kind of not that.
So
it felt like that can wait.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much. I mean... Great album.
Thank you.
You seem in a fantastic place.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing it live and be an album.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tim. You're a legend.
You too, man. Let's hear the final track on the Snow Patrol album. It's the title track, Forest is Back. You wear your heart upon their sleeve. That was Snow Patrol with The Forest is a Path, concluding this listening party. Thanks to Gary Lightbody for joining me on this episode of my listening party to tell me all about the new Snow Patrol album, The Forest is a Path, which is out now. Anyone who's heard the show before knows at this point I like to tell you about what other music I've been listening to recently. What have I been listening to recently? Well, I'll tell you. 10cc, classic band, had a studio in Stockport where the Charlatans first made records, but this is their album, and it's just called 10cc, but you know, all of their albums are fantastic. I've also been listening to John Martin and Beverly Martin, The Road to Ruin, classic sort of like 70s folk. Been listening to that and specifically in love with the track Anti-Aviator. I've recommended her before, but she has a new song out. So I was very excited this morning to listen to I Forget I'm So Young by Sophie Royer. I was watching a clip of Joni Mitchell talking about her influences from the generation before her, and she mentioned the Maguire sisters. So I've kind of been listening to their album because I've never heard of them before. So it's a new one for me, and if it's a new one for you, check that out too. While we're talking about recommendations, why don't you recommend this show to a friend? Tell them to replay any of the previous listening parties by just searching and following Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the episode in which Matt Johnson actually played the Omnichord for me, demonstrating how he wrote Thither's This Is The Day, which is a personal favourite of mine. There's also an episode with Charlene Spiteri from Texas where she discussed her friendship with the Wu-Tang Clan. Every song in this episode of my listening party was taken from Snow Patrol's The Forest Is The Path. The tracks are written by Gary Lightbody, Nathan Connolly and Johnny McDade. The album was released on Polydor in September 24. See you next time.
This is Absolute Radio.
Tim's Listening Party.